You know, we've always got Frank Sinatra recordings. They're coded away digitally in our collective memory. Not biological, but it's memory.
Thanks for the memory of things I can't forget. Journeys on a jet.
You know, there's this experiment about memory I learned about in high school biology class a long time ago. Flatworms, planaria, trained to be sensitive to light, were then ground up and fed to other flatworms without this sensitivity. And then after ingesting the biological encoding for light sensitivity, they developed the same sensitivity. Wow. Memory encoded and passed on. I wondered if deeply intuitive learned notions could also be passed on, like music, even history itself. Is there some encoded memory tape of what my great-great-great-grandfather saw in the Civil War that I could put on a screen? Well, I was assured by my biology teacher that no, only primitive stuff could be passed on. But a new study from geneticists at the Emory University School of Medicine may demonstrate that learned traits in higher species, not primitive stuff, can be passed on through DNA. Mice trained to be afraid of a smell similar to a cherry blossom produced mouse children and grandchildren who also hated the smell of the cherry blossom. Could a fear, a smell, be transmitted through a sperm and an egg?
This is unprecedented. We had some evidence from other work before that some exposures could be passed to the next generation. But it was never shown in such a specific way that a specific smell can be passed to the next generation on a specific gene that recognizes them.
That's Moshe Ziff, an epigeneticist and professor at McGill University in Montreal, reacting to the study. We wanted to talk about all this with David Schenk. He's the author of the book, The Genius in All of Us. He's talked a lot about epigenetics. David, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me back, John.
So the specific smell idea is unprecedented, but theoretically, we've been headed in this direction for quite a while.
We have. Ever since 1999, when there was an experiment done on the toad flax plant and flower, we discovered that, as Lamarck, Monsieur Lamarck, told us almost 200 years ago, and we laughed at him for 200 years, it's not just the genes themselves that pass on the information for the traits, but the epigenome, the envelope that the genes are wrapped up in, the DNA is wrapped up in. And what that means, and what we learned in 1999, and now there have been a dozen or more experiments that have confirmed this, is that lifestyle can alter. Life experiences can alter the epigenome. You can pass on results of your own life through your epigenome without altering your actual genes, and that can go on to your kids, your grandkids. Who knows how far that can go.
And the epigenome is kind of an engine of genetic material and triggers from the environment so that you pass on the epigenome, and if you encounter some of those same triggers in the environment, boom, you're switched on to the lifestyle. That's at least part of the story.
Absolutely. That's really well put. So what people – to take a step back, what people need to realize, and they didn't learn this when they were kids in school, but that genes are mostly about gene expression. They're getting turned on and off like more like switches than just kind of, you know, the blueprint of sending information. And now we know for sure that the epigenome is a big part of that. And now we know for sure with today's study and the few recent studies that we can alter our own epigenome and pass that on to our kids and grandkids.
In evolutionary terms, I was fascinated by the remarks of this professor, Moshe Ziff, up at McGill in Montreal. He has this to say about how this mechanism may work in evolutionary terms.
There are periods in evolution where things happen faster than just a natural selection could explain, and mechanisms like this can explain it. Not only that it happens faster, but it happens at a much higher frequency. The Darwinian evolution is based on random changes to genes that happen very infrequently. A mechanism like the mechanism that was shown in this paper happens at a very high frequency.
Can you help me understand what the high frequency, low frequency sort of thing is? How could epigenetics sort of explain speeded up periods of evolutionary change?
Well, so we're used to thinking of evolution as what Darwin told us, this idea that that has to be kind of a random genetic mutation. We need to wait for that mutation, then subsequently will lead to possibly a different trait, and then survival of the fittest. This is a whole different mechanism. This is you experiencing something in your life before you become a parent, and that's somehow getting imprinted on your epigenome and then translating to your kids and your grandkids. So that's obviously a lot faster in terms of the evolutionary change.
So can I throw an example at you? This could be maybe Neanderthals collectively having the experience of not finding much in the way of fruit and berries in their Northern European lifestyle. And so they're conditioned to think about obsessing over sweets when they encounter them. That's the kind of thing that could be stored in an epigenetic sort of way that will be passed on from generation to generation.
It absolutely is. We have studies that show that nutrition is a part of the story here. Nutrition can absolutely affect your epigenome and your epigenetic inheritance.
Now, can you pass along Frank Sinatra lyrics to your children in memory?
Truth is, we don't know how far this goes. But I can tell you this. This is going to be the century of the epigenome. It's going to change. If last century was the century of genetics, this is going to be the century of epigenome. It's going to affect everything we understand about disease, about intelligence, about talent, about lifestyle, and about evolution.
Is it encodable or decodable in the way that we, you know, specified the human genome? Epigenetically speaking, are these tapes that can be rewound and played back, or is it something fundamentally different? Stump the Shank. That's the name of the show, folks.
I think the answer is that, you know, there's mostly we know a lot about what we don't know, but we've opened a door here, and we now know now from confirmation, many studies that are confirming the same principle in many different ways.
But we think of the human genome as kind of passive, as something that's sort of set down and stated. The epigenetic is the opposite.
Exactly.
It's dynamic. It's moving. It's constantly interacting with the environment.
Life experience can alter your epigenome, and that can and does get passed on to your progeny.
Well, the genes of intelligence you've obviously passed on to your children, David. But what epigenetically speaking do you think you've passed on as well? Or is that too scary a thought?
I've probably passed on all my anxieties too, and my smell disorders and everything else.
David Shank is the author of the book, The Genius in All of Us. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
The giving season, we're asking, how do you determine where your charitable donations go? Tallahassee, Florida, one of you says, I give 27% of my annual income, whatever the source of it may have been, and I give based on the amount of the donation actually reaching the intended recipients.
This is Marianne from Athens, Ohio. We are increasingly careful in researching organizations before we donate. We try to be sure that they do not discriminate or exclude anyone from receiving services or goods. We also try to look for organizations such as Direct Relief, where less of the funds go to administration and more to the people who actually are needy and will benefit from these gifts.
Thanks, Mary. 877-8-MY-TAKE. Follow us on Twitter @TheTakeaway. Join the conversation.